Chapter 6. The Transition to Monetary Freedom. Our present monetary system is failing. The time is ripe for fundamental monetary reform, yet there are two distinct and different processes through which this reform may be achieved. We have already discussed the type of monetary system most desirable, yet there are different methods of reaching that goal. For simplicity's sake, we shall refer to these procedures as descending reform and ascending reform. The first term refers to action taken by the government directly to create the system desired. It is from the top down. The danger of this type of reform is that the government will not create a real gold standard but a pseudo-gold standard. The second term refers to the absence of government action and the subsequent appearance of the reforms despite the government's inaction. It is bottom-up reform. There is a third type of reform which mixes both the ascending and the descending procedures, whereby the government clears the obstacles now impeding reform from the bottom up. It is our opinion that this third type of reform would be the least painful for reasons shortly to be made clear. During the course of a monetary crisis, such as we are experiencing now, there comes a time when descending reform becomes much more difficult. It is our belief that we have not yet reached that point, but that we are rapidly approaching it. There is still time to proceed with the reforms outlined below, but that time is rapidly slipping away. In order to achieve this descending reform, the Congress must quickly repeal certain laws that have created our present crisis. The legal tender laws, the authority of the Federal Reserve to conduct open market operations, and so forth. Failure to do so will result in a complete collapse of our economic system. The process of mixed reform is preferable because it can achieve the desired end with a minimum of injury to the people. It can avert an economic calamity if executed in time, but should descending reform not occur in time, and it now appears that it will not, given the unwillingness of the Commission to make more far-reaching recommendations to the Congress, we can hope that ascending reform will still be possible. Should the Congress not adopt the reforms we advocate, we can expect our economic situation to deteriorate further. First, there will be a continuation of both price increases and high interest rates. Such prices and rates may fluctuate in a cyclical pattern, but they will not secularly decline. The prime rate has already reached 21.5%. Perhaps within a year it will move to 25%, fall back, and then surge ahead to 30%. The exact figures are not as important as realizing that the present irredeemable paper money system is just that, irredeemable. Such systems have not worked and cannot work for any significant period of time. Further cyclical price and interest rate increases will, in turn, trigger many more bankruptcies, both commercial and personal. Bank runs, panics, and holidays will occur as the people lose confidence in the financial institutions. Such collapses will, in turn, trigger higher unemployment, reaching levels not seen since the 1930s, larger federal deficits, and further inflation. The paper economy is a circle of dominoes. Once they start to fall, they bring others down with them. Real wage rates will slide. Applications for welfare will accelerate. These economic events will have social and political consequences. Inflations always do. The inflation of the 1920s led to the rise of Hitler in Germany, and that of the 1940s to the victory of Mao Zedong in China. The increase in the size and scope of government is a significant effect of such crises. Yet it is the effect that threatens to choke off any possibility of ascending reform. Such reform, when it comes, will have to emerge from the marketplace, either through the legalization of competing currencies or through development in the underground, illegal economy. Economists already believe that there may be an underground economy in the United States, one-fifth the size of the official economy. With the collapse of the official money and the official economy, the underground economy might be able to shift to using silver and gold coins, and thus some ascending reforms might be possible. However, simply waiting for the present system to collapse is neither responsible nor moral. As members of the Gold Commission, we must urge Congress to act upon our specific suggestions for reform as speedily as possible. We do not believe that we overestimate the gravity of the present situation, and we think it is better, by far, to be 2 years too early than 2 days too late. Specific reforms required. The growth of the American economy in the late 19th and 20th centuries is reflected in its increasing presence and finally monopolization of the monetary system. Any attempt at restoring monetary freedom must be part of a comprehensive plan to roll back government and once again confine it within the limits of the Constitution. That comprehensive plan may be divided into 4 sections: monetary legislation, the budget, taxation, and regulation. We shall begin with monetary reforms and conclude with a word about international cooperation and agreement. Monetary legislation, legal tender laws. As we have seen, the Constitution forbids the states to make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt, nor does it permit the federal government to make anything a legal tender. One of the most important pieces of legislation that could be enacted would be the repeal of all federal legal tender laws. Such laws, which have the effect of forcing creditors to accept something in payment for the debts due them that they do not wish to accept, are one of the most tyrannical devices of the present monetary authorities. Not only does the Federal Reserve have a coercive monopoly in issuing money, but every American is forced to accept it. Each Federal Reserve note bears the words, "This note is legal tender for all debts, public and private." The freedom to conduct business in something else, such as gold and silver coin, cannot exist so long as the government forces everyone to accept its paper notes. Monetary freedom ends where legal tender laws begin. The United States had no such laws until 1862, when the Congress, in violation of the Constitution, enacted them in order to ensure the acceptance of the Lincoln greenbacks, the paper notes printed by the U.S. Treasury during the wartime emergency. That emergency has now lasted for 120 years. It is time that this unconstitutional action by the Congress be repealed. Freedom of contract and the right to have such contracts enforced, not abrogated, by the government is one of the fundamental pillars of a free society. Defining the dollar. A second major reform needed is a legal definition of the term dollar. The Constitution uses the word dollar at least twice, and it is quite clear that by it the framers meant the Spanish milled dollar of 371 1/4 grains of silver. Since 1968, however, there has been no domestic definition of dollar. For in that year, redemption of silver certificates and delivery of silver in exchange for the notes ended, and silver coins were removed from circulation. In 1971, the international definition of the dollar as 1/42 of an ounce of gold was also dropped. The Treasury and Federal Reserve still value gold at $42.22 per ounce, but that is a mere accounting device. In addition, IMF rules now prohibit any member country from externally defining its currency in terms of gold. The word dollar, quite literally, is legally meaningless and has been meaningless for the past decade. Federal Reserve notes are not dollars. They are notes denominated in dollars. But what a dollar is? No one knows. This absurdity at the basis of our monetary system must be corrected. It is of secondary importance whether we define a dollar as a weight of gold or as a weight of silver. What is important is that it be defined. The current situation permits the Federal Reserve, and the Internal Revenue Service for that matter, to use the word any way they please, just like the Red Queen in Alice in Wonderland. No rational economic activity can be conducted when the unit of account is undefined. The use of the meaningless term dollar has all but wrecked the capital markets in this country. If the dollar changes in meaning from day to day, even hour to hour, long-term contracts denominated in dollars become traps that all wish to avoid. The breakdown of long-term financing and planning in the past decade is the result of the absurd nature of the dollar. There's very little long-term planning occurring at the present. The only way to restore rationality to the system is to restore a definition for the term dollar. We suggest defining a dollar as a weight of gold of a certain fineness, 0.999 fine. Such a fixed definition is the only way to restore confidence in the markets and in the dollar. Capitalism cannot survive the type of irrationality that lies at the basis of our present monetary arrangements. A new coinage. We are extremely pleased that the Gold Commission has recommended to the Congress a new gold coinage. It has been almost 50 years since the last United States gold coins were struck, and renewing this constitutional function would indeed be a cause for celebration and jubilee. We believe that the coin should be struck in 1 ounce, 1/2 ounce, 1/4 ounce, and 1/10 ounce weights. Using the most beautiful of coin designs, that designed by Augustus St. Gaudens in 1907. A coin of such weights would allow Americans to exchange their greenbacks for genuine American coins. There would be no longer any need for purchasing Canadian, Mexican, South African, or other foreign coins. Combined with the removal of capital gains taxation on the coins and the elimination of all transaction taxes, such as excise and sales taxes, the new American coinage could quickly become an alternative monetary system to our present paper monopoly. In addition to the new official coinage, private mints should also be permitted to issue their own coins under their own trademarks. Such trademarks should be protected by law, just as other trademarks are. Furthermore, private citizens should once again enjoy the right to bring gold bullion to the Treasury and exchange it for coins of the United States for a nominal minting fee. In the last 6 years, Nobel laureate Friedrich Hayek has called attention once again to the economic advantages of a system of competing currencies. In 2 books, Choice in Currency and Denationalization of Money, Professor Hayek proposes that all legal obstacles be removed and that the people be allowed to choose freely what they wish to use in transactions. Those competing monies might be foreign currencies, private coins, government coins, private banknotes, and so on. Such unrestricted freedom of choice would result in the most reliable currencies or coins winning public acceptance and displacing less reliable competitors. Good money, in the absence of government coercion, drives out bad. The new coinage that the Gold Commission has recommended, and which we strongly endorse, is a first step in the direction of allowing currencies to compete freely. By a strict interpretation of the Constitution, one of the most unconstitutional, if there are degrees of unconstitutionality, of federal agencies is the Federal Reserve. The Constitution grants no power to the Congress to set up such an institution, and the Fed is the major cause of our present monetary problems. The alleged constitutional authority stems from a loose and imaginative interpretation of the implied powers clause. Functioning as the central bank of the United States, the Federal Reserve is an anachronism. It was created at a time when faith in control of the economy by Washington was growing. But since it started operations in 1914, it has caused the greatest depressions, 1929 to 1939, recessions, too numerous to mention, inflations and unemployment levels in our nation's history. The only useful function it performs, the clearing of checks between banks, could be much better handled through private clearinghouses or eliminated entirely by electronic funds transfer. Given its record, there simply is no good reason for allowing the Federal Reserve a monopoly over the nation's money and banking system. Eliminating the power to conduct market operations must be achieved if we expect to stop inflation and restore monetary freedom. Such a step may alarm some, however. They might be concerned about what will happen to all the Federal Reserve notes now in circulation and what they will be replaced with. First, the present Federal Reserve notes would be retired and replaced by notes redeemable in gold or silver or some other commodity. Such notes would be similar to traveler's checks now in use, which are at the present time redeemable only in paper notes. Like traveler's checks, such notes would not be legal tender and no one would be forced to accept them in payment. And since they would be promises to pay, any institution that issued them and then failed to redeem them as promised would be subject to both civil and criminal prosecution, unlike the Federal Reserve, which is subject to neither. As for the present circulating Federal Reserve notes, they could be made redeemable for gold once a dollar is defined as a weight of gold. Anyone who wishes to redeem them could simply do so by exchanging them for gold coins at his bank. It is important to note that should we institute a gold standard before the Federal Reserve system is ended, that system must function along classical gold standard lines. As Friedman and Schwartz pointed out, it was the failure of the Federal Reserve to abide by the classical gold standard rules that caused the panic of 1929 and the subsequent depression. In Chapters 2 and 3, we demonstrated the disruptive effects fractional reserve banking has caused in the United States. Since we still suffer with that system, it is imperative that a fundamental reform of it be made. That reform is simply that all promises to pay on demand, whether made in the form of notes or deposits, be backed 100% by whatever is promised, be it silver, gold, or watermelons. If there is any failure to carry 100% reserves or to make delivery when demanded, such persons or institutions would be subject to severe penalties. The fractional reserve system has created the business cycle, and if that is to be eliminated, its cause must be also. Audit, inventory, assay, and confiscation. One of the areas in which we believe a majority of the Gold Commission erred is in not requiring a thorough and complete assay, inventory, and audit of the gold reserves of the United States on a regular basis. Perhaps there is less of an argument for such a procedure when the gold reserves are essentially stable, but when there is any significant change in them, as will happen when a new coinage is issued, careful scrutiny of the government's gold supplies is necessary. There have been cases of employee thefts at government bullion depositories, unrecorded shipments of gold from one depository to another, and numerous press reports about millions of dollars worth of gold missing. It seems elementary that the government ought to ascertain accurately its reserves of this precious metal, and that the present 10-year audit of the gold inventory is totally inadequate for this purpose. We are quite sure that the Federal Reserve has a much better idea of how many Federal Reserve notes are printed and circulating than the Treasury does of the weight and fineness of its gold assets. This irrational treatment of paper and gold must be corrected immediately. Finally, there are laws on the books empowering the President to compel delivery, that is, to confiscate privately owned gold bullion, gold coins, and gold certificates in time of war. There can be no monetary freedom when the possibility of such a confiscation exists. The budget. One of the standard objections raised against a gold standard is that while it may have worked in the 19th century, it would not work today, for government has grown much larger in the past 100 years. There is an element of truth in such an argument, for the gold standard is not compatible with a government that continually incurs deficits and lives beyond its means. Growing governments have always sought to be rid of the discipline of gold. Historically, they have abandoned gold during wars in order to finance them with paper dollars, and during other periods of massive government growth, the New Deal, for example. Because gold is honest money, it is disliked by dishonest men. Politicians, prevented from buying votes with their own money, have learned how to buy votes with the people's money. They promise to vote for all sorts of programs if elected, and they expect to pay for those programs through deficits and through the creation of money out of thin air, not higher taxes. Under a gold standard, such irresponsibility would immediately result in high interest rates as the government borrowed money and subsequent unemployment. But through the magic of the Federal Reserve, these effects can be postponed for a while, allowing the politicians sufficient time to blame everyone else for the economic problems they have caused. The result is, as John Maynard Keynes said many years ago, that not one man in a million understands who is to blame for inflation. Because the gold standard would be incompatible with deficit financing, a major reform needed would be a balanced budget. Such a balance could easily be achieved by cutting spending. Surprising as it may be, no cuts have been made yet, to the level of revenue received by the government. But beyond that, there should be massive cuts in both spending and taxes, something on the order of what President Truman did following World War II, when 75% of the federal budget was eliminated over a period of 3 years. Honest money and limited government are equally necessary in order to end our present economic crisis. As part of this budget reform, the government should eventually be required to make all its payments in gold or in gold-denominated accounts. No longer would it be able to spend money created out of thin air by the Federal Reserve. Taxation. In order to make such gold payments, the government should begin accepting gold as payment for all taxes, duties, and dues. As a tax collector, the government must specify in what form taxes may be paid, or must be paid, and it should specify that taxes must be paid in either gold or silver coins or certificates. Such an action should occur, of course, as one of the last actions in moving toward a sound monetary system. All the other reforms discussed here should be accomplished first. Such a requirement to pay taxes in gold or silver would yield the necessary flow to put the government on the gold standard and allow it to make all payments in gold. But long before this is achieved, since gold is money, there should be no taxation of any sort on either gold coins or bullion. The Commission has judged rightly in recommending that capital gains and sales taxes be eliminated from the new American coinage. We would go further, in the interest of monetary freedom, and urge that all taxation of whatever sort be eliminated on all gold and silver coins and bullion. That would mean the elimination of not only capital gains and sales taxes, but also the discriminatory treatment of gold coins in individual retirement accounts, for example. Persons saving for their retirement should be free to keep their savings in gold coins without incurring a penalty. One reform that might be accomplished immediately would be to direct the Internal Revenue Service to accept all U.S. money at face value for both the assessment and collection of taxes. At the present time, the IRS accepts pre-1965 silver coins at face value in the collection of taxes, but at market value in the assessment of taxes. This policy is grossly unfair, has no basis in law, and should be corrected immediately. Regulations. Together with monetary, tax, and budget reforms, a comprehensive plan for a gold standard and monetary freedom requires several improvements in our present regulatory structure. For example, mining regulations, which make it difficult and expensive to open or operate gold and silver mines, would have to be eliminated. All regulations on the export, import, melting, minting, and hoarding of gold coins would also have to be repealed. But the major reforms needed are in our banking laws. Under present law, there is no free entry into the banking industry. It is largely cartelized by the Federal Reserve and other federal and state regulatory agencies. Deregulation of banking, including free entry by simply filing the legal documents with the proper government clerk, is a must for monetary freedom. All discretion on the part of the regulators must be ended. At the same time, there would need to be stricter enforcement of the constitutional prohibition against states emitting bills of credit. It must be clearly recognized that the states, either directly nor indirectly, through their creatures, state-chartered banks, may get into the paper money business. A constitutional amendment. Although we believe that there actually is nothing in the Constitution that legitimizes our present banking and monetary arrangements, the present system has been with us for so long that a constitutional amendment is probably needed to reaffirm what the Constitution says. We propose that the following language become Article 27 to the Constitution. Neither Congress nor any state shall make anything a tender in payment of private debts, nor shall they charter any bank or note-issuing institution, and states shall make only gold and silver coins as tender in payment of public taxes, duties, and dues. An international agreement. While the achievement of monetary freedom can be accomplished without any international conferences or agreements, there is no need to spurn such conferences, should they be requested by other nations, or should they be thought advisable simply as a way of informing other nations of our plans. Were we to adopt the proposals outlined in this report, the dollar would once again become as good as gold, and paper currencies would fall in value against it on the international exchanges. In that case, one would expect other nations to define their currencies also as weights of gold, simply out of self-defense. Were that to happen, we would see the end of the worldwide inflation that has plagued us since 1971. Fixed exchange rates, though not fixed by any international agreement, would also result, simply because currencies would be defined as weights of gold. Thus, the whole domestic reforms suggested here would have worldwide repercussions, international effects that would solve one of our most troubling problems, worldwide inflation, and the breakdown of world trade. The transition to gold. The transition from the present monetary system to a sound system will probably not be painless, as some have suggested. Whenever the increase in the supply of money slows, there are always recessions. There are the inevitable consequences of the previous inflationary boom. The present system, relying as it does on the political creation of new purchasing power rather than the economic creation of such power, has distorted and disrupted the pattern of economic activity that would result were the markets for goods and money allowed to function freely. In any transition to a sound monetary system, there will, of necessity, have to be readjustments made in various sectors of the economy. Such readjustments will temporarily hurt certain individuals and enterprises. The alternative, of course, is to continue with our present system and destroy the entire economy with the evils of hyperinflation and depression. It is our conclusion that the temporary economic hazards of the transition to a gold standard are far less significant than those posed by a continued attempt to make the paper system work. We have a precedent for a return to gold in the 19th century. During the Civil War, the Union had issued United States notes that were not redeemable in gold. In that respect, they were somewhat similar to the Federal Reserve notes that circulate today. A major difference between the experience following the Civil War and our situation today is, of course, that the U.S. gold coinage continued to circulate during and after the war. Today, such coins have been removed from circulation by law, and they must be restored to circulation by law. That is essentially the recommendation of the Commission, a recommendation that we fully support. Such an action will facilitate the transition to a full gold standard. Once it is achieved, the transition to a full gold standard could be done as simply as during the 19th century, with the economic consequences roughly the same. We must now discuss the transition effect, not the long-term effects of monetary reform on various sectors of the economy. We have selected six sectors for brevity's sake: real estate, agriculture, heavy industry, small business, exports, and banking. Let's begin with real estate. Transition effects on the real estate sector. The concern of many people with monetary reform is that it will affect them or their businesses adversely. They would prefer to continue with the present system, hoping that it will not collapse, rather than seeking to correct it through fundamental change. In this attitude, they are similar to the patient with an abdominal pain who refuses to be examined by a doctor, hoping that the discomfort will cease or at least not worsen. When his appendix bursts, however, the patient realizes that he would have been much better off to have the needed examination and surgery in time. At least the surgery, the timely correction of the problem, would not have threatened his life. How will a transition to gold affect the real estate market? It is important to realize that there is no single real estate market, but several. The commercial market is quite different from the residential, for example. Within the residential, the single-family housing market is quite different from the rental housing market. While there may be factors that affect all markets, it is necessary to realize that the various markets will be affected differently by the same factors and also by different factors. During the last 10 years of paper inflation, real estate of all sorts has become both an inflation hedge and a haven against exorbitant taxation. In a transition to gold, there will be falling inflationary expectations and, if our recommendations are pursued, lower taxes. Both these effects will gradually eliminate the desire to use real estate as a shield against inflation and taxation. The result generally will be falling prices for real estate of all kinds, as people shift from protecting their capital in real estate to more productive enterprises. It is likely the paper values of both residential and commercial properties will fall during the transition to a sound money system. This, in turn, would have several effects. First, as residential prices fall, more young couples who cannot afford a house at the present time would be able to purchase. More houses, but at lower prices, would be sold during each year of the transition to gold. For state and local governments, this would mean an expanding property tax base, but it would also offer some relief to the badgered homeowners who have seen their property taxes skyrocket because of inflated housing prices. The passage of Proposition 13 in California in 1978 was a result of this property tax rise. With the transition to gold, homeowners across the whole nation, not just California, would be afforded some tax relief. Lower home prices will eventually translate into a booming market for both single-family and rental units, spurring new construction. Lower prices would also affect all forms of commercial property, allowing more economical expansion of the business use of property. Along with lower prices, there will be lower interest rates. Market interest rates are ordinarily divided into three components by economists: originary interest, the risk premium, and the inflation premium. As the transition toward gold is accomplished, the inflation premium would gradually disappear, as the people's confidence in money was restored. It is also probable that both the risk and originary components would decrease, although not nearly as much as the inflation component, for people will once again begin to plan for longer than 12 months into the future. And as the size of government shrinks, the risk premium will also shrink. One great area of risk is uncertainty. Actions by federal bureaucrats and regulators will be eliminated. Falling interest rates would also encourage greater activity in all real estate markets. The result would be greater access by first-time owners, younger couples, and small businessmen. Transition effect on agriculture. Closely related to real estate is agriculture. Speculation in real estate in the past 10 years, speculation resulting from inflation and taxation by the government, has caused the price of prime farmland to be bid up to levels higher than prevailed 10 years ago. One serious consequence of this has been the almost total inability of new, small farmers to buy farms and of older small farmers to retain farms. High land values, while giving many farmers paper wealth, have raised property taxes exorbitantly and have forced more and more small farmers to sell out to larger competitors. The result has been the growth of agribusiness and euthanasia of the family farmer. During the transition to a gold system, interest rates and land values would both fall, the former primarily because of lower inflation expectations, the latter primarily because there would be far less demand for land as an inflation hedge. A parallel may be found in the 19th century. From 1880 to 1890, immediately after the return to the gold standard, the number of farms in the U.S. increased by over 500,000, the number of acres on these farms by almost 90 million, farm productivity by 10%, and the value of farm output by over $800 million. During this time, however, farm commodity prices were falling, an effect of the transition to gold that many fear. But wholesale prices for the goods farmers used were falling as well, faster than were prices for the goods they produced. The real income of farmers and of all workers was actually rising during this period, unlike, for example, the past 10 years. The transition to a sound monetary system, while it may adversely affect a few farmers and real estate holders, will enormously benefit most and will allow more entry into farming. Transition effects on heavy industry. One of the prime benefits of sound money and small government is the low long-term interest rates that prevail in such an environment. During the 19th century, it was common for 100-year bonds to be offered and sold at 4% and 5%, and even for bonds in perpetuity to be sold at those rates. Today, after a decade of paper money, long-term means 3 years, and the prime rate is 16.5%. Transition to a gold system will include a fall in interest rates from their present historical unprecedented levels to levels approximating those of the late 19th and early 20th century. For the decade 1880 to 1889, 3 to 6 month commercial paper averaged 5.14%. Call money averaged 3.98%. Railroad bond yields averaged 4.43% in 1889. Such rates will once again allow heavy industry to expand, perhaps even matching the unsurpassed real growth for the economy in the decade 1879 to 1889. The recent concern about the revitalization of America or the reindustrialization of America is a genuine and legitimate concern. What is important to realize, however, is that it is paper money, high tax, and regulatory policies of the government that have impeded long-term planning and capital investment. Anyone who expresses concern about the industrial strength of America and advocates a continuation of the policies that have caused the present recession, depression, has not yet learned elementary economics. Some heavy industries that have been protected by government action may suffer some setbacks when that protection is removed. However, if regulatory burdens and subsidies are eliminated in an even-handed fashion during the transition, those industries, as well as others, should quickly enjoy rapid growth. Further, there will be a desire of investors, now concerned about sheltering their capital in the unproductive areas of real estate, collectibles, and gold coins, to invest in productive enterprises. There would be a market shift of investment from such speculative areas to industry. Transition effects on small business. The shift of capital investment from the more speculative areas to the more productive will directly affect small business. The stock market would come to life, perhaps even making up for the horrendous losses in constant dollars it has suffered since 1965. Business investment would skyrocket, and a great deal of this investment would flow to smaller businesses. As with real estate and farming, it would be the newcomer, the young couple buying a house, the young farmer and the small businessman who would benefit most during the transition to economic and monetary freedom. Small businesses would no longer be crushed by large corporations and bloated government absorbing all the capital in the capital markets. Funds would flow to establish new enterprises rather than being invested in treasury securities at 14% or 15%. A gold system would see the gradual elimination of hot money, a phenomenon that did not exist before the formation of the Federal Reserve in 1914, racing from investment to investment as interest rates fluctuated. The growth in small business would, of course, mean the creation of new jobs. The unemployment that is an inevitable product of a paper money system, after all, John Maynard Keynes liked the system because it was a device to cheat the workers, would be eliminated and fall to the frictional rate, perhaps 2% or 3%. The transition to freedom would also mean the gradual elimination of the underground economy, since the reasons for its existence, high taxes and inflation, would disappear. Such illegal economic activities would once again become part of the official economy. The elaborate bartering systems that have evolved in the past 10 years would be ended. It is ironic that opponents of gold deride transactions made in gold as a form of barter, for it is precisely the high-tax paper money system that encourages barter as a way to avoid both taxation and inflation. Transition effects on exports. To understand the effects of the reforms we recommend on export industries, it is necessary to keep two more fundamental effects of the transition in mind. No more general price increases will occur, and interest rates will actually fall by at least 50%. Price stability in all products, including those for export, will open up greater overseas markets for U.S. goods. On the other hand, the present complicated system of export subsidies, such as guaranteed loans and direct loans, will come to an end during the transition to freedom, and those companies and banks that benefited from such sweetheart deals with the government will have to make it on their own or fail. The government policies for the past 10 years and longer have diverted a great deal of capital that should and would have been invested in the U.S. to foreign nations. This misdirected investment would be corrected during the transition, as foreign aid programs were phased out, the Export-Import Bank eliminated, and the various other government programs that have put us in a very precarious position are terminated. In the long run, of course, exports are not a worry. No one worries about the balance of trade or the balance of payments between Texas and California or New Jersey and New York. With the end of a paper system, with its chaotic exchange rates, some semblance of order will return to the world economy. The exporting of inflation will be gradually eliminated, and rather than moving toward protectionism and isolationism, the international economy will gradually open up to further investment and trade. Export industries may be the most affected of all industries during a transition to a sound money system. But that is only because they have been so heavily subsidized by a government that has had to print the paper to subsidize them. In the long run, such industries also will benefit from a return to freedom. Transition effects on banking. The last of the six sectors is perhaps the one that will be most adversely, in the short run, affected by the reforms we propose. To understand why this is so, one must understand the cartelization of the financial industries in the 1930s, accomplished primarily by the McFadden Act and the Glass-Steagall Act. The breakdown of this cartel has already begun, as a result of the high interest rates now prevailing, and it will proceed whether the reforms here suggested are adopted or not. The only question is whether a new cartel or whether freedom will be allowed to flourish. The McFadden Act, among other things, forbade interstate branching. Chase Manhattan could open a branch in Moscow, for example, but not in Minneapolis. This resulted in a great deal of interest in overseas loans, with a tremendous diversion of capital from domestic to foreign investment. The Glass-Steagall Act, among other things, erected a wall of separation between banking and commercial enterprises, a wall that now more resembles a Swiss cheese. But such a separation, combined with other restrictions on free entry, enhanced the privilege and profitability of banks. The reforms we advocate include free entry into banking. Anyone would be permitted to open a bank and issue 100% redeemable notes simply upon filing the legal documents with the county or state or federal clerk. Such free entry will result in greater competition in the banking industry and lower margins of profit. Not only would the competition benefit consumers financially, more and more services would also be offered. Thus, if any town savings and loan wish to give away toasters for new deposits, the Depository Institution's Deregulation Committee could not stop them from doing so. And if their neighbors, any town credit union, wish to offer electronic funds transfer and free traveler's checks, no regulator would prevent that from happening. But there are further effects that would become apparent during transition to a gold system. As interest rates fell, the current crisis among financial institutions would be alleviated. Unless such a transition begins quickly, we could expect to see the most massive failure of depository institutions in our history. A movement toward sound money, while opening up all financial institutions to the sort of competition they should have faced all along, will, at the same time, relieve some of the pressure on the most critical of these institutions. The alternative, of course, is massive government bailouts costing tens, perhaps hundreds of billions of dollars. Conclusion. We have selected these six sectors of the economy as bases for discussing what effects a transition to monetary freedom will have on the economy. While the results have not been uniformly optimistic, it is clear that the major effects of stable prices and falling interest rates will open all sectors up to newcomers, new farmers, new homeowners, new small businessmen, and new bankers. Those companies that have been subsidized by the government will suffer most from a movement toward freedom. Those that have profited from the misdirection of capital investment by the government will also suffer. A gold standard recession, however, would be quite different from a paper money recession, such as we are now suffering. Were the government to refuse to interfere with the adjustment process, the recession would be over very rapidly, as we saw in the last free market recession of 1921. And while the recession would be short, it would also not be sharp. There would undoubtedly be a tremendous outpouring of new savings and investments in response to the new confidence in honest money and the realization that inflation was a thing of the past. The transition to a gold system will bring increasing prosperity, real growth, lower unemployment, higher real wages, and greater capital investment. The transition to freedom, in short, is the only way out of the economic crisis we are now in.